Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Jacqueline Robinson, a geriatrician with Banner Alzheimer's Institute, and we're going to be discussing evaluating medications. Whenever I'm teaching classes to caregivers, the discussion inevitably turns to medications. This is such a complicated subject. What do medications for dementia do? What's the point of taking them if they don't fix the problem? Are there medications that someone with dementia shouldn't be taking? What can I take to make sure that I don't get dementia? More generally, how do medications affect older adults differently than their younger counterparts? Medications are certainly a tangled subject, and so we decided to go to an expert to get some answers. Dr. Robinson actually has a special interest in medication deprescribing.
Well, I am so glad that we did, and I look forward to finding out about that word, deprescribing. But Heather, you are right, because for the caregivers I know, it is so complex. And learning about medications and strategies and treatments for symptoms and diseases that no one ever wanted to be dealing with can just seem overwhelming and like a barrage of incoming information. And I've also been asked, you know, why should someone get diagnosed and what can they even do? So, hey, let's find out about the medications that are available and other things to be aware of around this topic and what these medications can actually do to help people living with dementia, their caregivers and families.
Welcome, Dr. Robinson. Thanks for joining our conversation today.
Hi, Heather. Hi, Janice. Happy to be here.
Before we get started, I'd like to learn a little bit more about you. Can you tell us about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community?
Yeah, absolutely. So after medical school, I went to my family medicine residency in Phoenix. Of course, you know, family medicine is multi-specialty care in all ages from beginning of life to end of life. And my second year, we do a geriatric medicine rotation. That's where I first met Dr. Walter Neary. He's a geriatrician in Phoenix, and he's associated with Banner, and he's also been the program director of the geriatric medicine fellowship up there. Anyway, so he first introduced this idea to me about polypharmacy, poly meaning many or more than, you know, just a few, you know, multiple medications that someone may be taking. And that kind of started my interest in older adult care, as well as looking more into detail about what medications my patients were taking. And so during residency, I was involved in many projects that centered around this idea of medication evaluation. There's an annual, the Medicare annual wellness visit, which a couple of co-residents and I did as a quality improvement project to help, you know, look at these medication lists. I did, you know, personal, you know, case presentations, journal article presentations to help increase my knowledge about what do all these terms mean? And just to, you know, I had more of interest and it kept building and building up. Also during my second year of residency, I applied for and was able to be a part of the Hospice of the Valley Dementia Fellowship that they had at the time that was headed by Jan Daugherty. And she was a hospice nurse for a very long time in Phoenix. And so I learned a lot from her and, you know, pushed me to apply for geriatric medicine fellowship. One of the final things we did in residency is our grand rounds, which is kind of like our thesis project. We ask a few questions in medicine of our own topic of interest. And of course, I did, you know, assessing polypharmacy in older adults. And I kind of based that around, you know, fall risks, emergency room visits, and then, you know, if there's any specific information about that I could find about diabetes management. So that's really what got me here. It all kind of started in residency, and I just kind of took it upon myself to learn more. And it always was just kind of an underlying interest of mine. So then when I came back to Tucson last year for my geriatric medicine fellowship, I was also involved in a few other projects. I became affiliated with the American Geriatric Society during my time, we would go to a nursing home in Benson, which is about 45 minutes south of Tucson. I went there twice weekly, and I did my, research poster presentation that went on to be presented as a poster at the American Geriatric Society conference that's held annually in May. And I actually had a presidential poster presentation, finalist. So that was pretty cool, but it was looking at two common medications that are prescribed, or categories of medications that are prescribed in nursing home situation. So yeah, it's just kind of, I'll add it up, and, I really take a point to review, people's medications lists very carefully.
What an interesting story to hear how kind of this little seed of an idea has now sort of become an undercurrent of your now professional career. Can we learn some kind of generally speaking about medication management? Can you talk to us about medication safety? Do you have any general pearls that you might use to guide a family?
Right. Well, at the beginning, Janice had mentioned, what does deprescribing even mean? So I think I should define some terms for you. So deprescribing would be the opposite of, adding medication. So prescribing medication would be adding new medication or starting a new medication, versus deprescribing would be decreasing medication. Polypharmacy, which I touched a little bit about, is generally defined and accepted as five or more medications that are routine medications or scheduled medications. And super polypharmacy or extra polypharmacy is 10 or more scheduled medications. So that's not even including as needed medications such as Tylenol for pain or, melatonin to help someone sleep. So it's only the routine scheduled everyday medications. And then medication management in general, I think every visit, every provider should be at least checking the medication list and verifying what medications patients are actually taking. There's a lot that goes into medication safety. Who's managing the medications? Is it the patient themselves that are, able to go to the pharmacy, fill their prescription, go home, organize their medications? Do they have a system in which they take their medications? Do they just know, do they arrange their medications, one through whatever and take them one by one? Do they organize using a medication box or pill organizer, things like that? Do they have a schedule where they know, what time of day do they take their medication? Are they once a day, twice a day, three times a day? So there's a lot of at least at-home safety. Additionally, how is the medication taken? Is it a tablet or a pill? Is it capsule? Is it short-term or immediate release? Does it have a shorter time acting on the body, or is it longer acting? We may see, medications are denoted as IR, immediate release, meaning they're, shorter time in the body, or extended release or sustained release, ERSR. And then some other important concepts, I think patients and their caregivers, care partners, family members should be aware of is, most patients with dementia or, memory or cognitive problems are older adults. Geriatrics in general, defined by Medicare, is 65 and older. And it's important to recognize that all organ systems of the body go through some physiological aging process. Our skin loses elasticity, our muscles atrophy, or, they lose that lean mass. You gain more fat distribution through the body. So this affects all of these physiological aging changes of the organ systems affect how medications, act on the body. So we have this idea in pharmacology, pharmacokinetics. How does the drug act on the body? How is it absorbed? How is it distributed? How is it metabolized? How is it excreted? Additionally, how does the drug act on the body? So there's a lot of things to consider, side effects, kidney function, liver function, drug-drug interactions, their side effects, all these sort of things. So there's plenty to discuss there.
Thank you so much for just untangling some of this confusion around medication and why it's so important to have medication safety. Talk to us about how we can ensure that our person is taking medications appropriately so that they are safe.
Right. So, you know, ensuring at every appointment, there are, you know, copies. Well, first that the medications are, you know, checklist format. So whether the medical assistant, but I always, you know, think that the doctor provider should really be going through to ensure that those medications are correct on the list, you know, dose, frequency, you know, route, is it by mouth? Is it a transdermal patch? Is it a liquid form? So all of those things, you know, really should be checked. Patients and their caregivers or care partners should be going home with at least, you know, one list, if not multiple copies. So that way the patient has one, care partner has one, et cetera. And also a copy by the medical records or where the medications are actually kept, you know, so having multiple copies of updated lists. And again, going through, you know, how is the medication actually being taken at home? Who organizes the medications? You know, does the patient need help taking their medication? So all of those things should really be discussed as part of the medication safety. And there's no gray area. There can be some issues, you know, if a patient unfortunately would go to the hospital or emergency room, you know, those things, those transitional care periods can also get disrupt medications, as, you know, patients are often discharged from a hospital or other care setting and their medications might have changed. So those are areas, those transitional care is really important that the primary care physician or, you know, somebody, one of providers is really checking that the lists are consistent and always updated.
Dr. Robinson, these have been really helpful strategies to keep in mind. I wonder if we could transition a little bit. I'd like to learn more about the medications that we have currently available to treat dementia. Could you tell us what they are and maybe how they work?
Sure, absolutely. So there's two major classes of approved, FDA approved Alzheimer's disease medication. And there are many types of dementia, Alzheimer's disease, you know, being the most common, you know, 50 to 80% of dementia. So for many different types of dementias, they're often treated the same because we're trying to target in the brain acting on the memory circuit, right? So when we receive information to the brain, it goes to the center of the brain, the memory center, and neurotransmitters or neurohormones, which are, you know, proteins all over the body, but neurohormone proteins, specialized hormones of the brain and neurosystem, will act and travel different areas of the brain to basically consolidate those memories. And so it's kind of a complicated process, but essentially we know that the neurotransmitter acetylcholine is related to memory and related to the memory circuit. And so one of the major classes of approved Alzheimer's disease medications works to increase availability of acetylcholine in the brain. They're called acetylcholine esterase inhibitors, kind of a mouthful there. And of course, every medication name has two names, the generic name and the brand name. So the three main drugs we have right now are donepezil, which is the generic name, or Aricept, which is the brand name, rivastigmine and Exelon, the second one, and then galantamine or Rasidine. So these all work on the increasing acetylcholine in the brain. Rivastigmine or Exelon is the only one that comes as a pill form, also as a transdermal patch. So that can be really useful if a patient has any trouble swallowing or you know, GI issues that they can't tolerate taking medications. The Exelon patch is a really great opportunity for that. And then the second major category is what we call NMDA antagonist. And this works on an excitatory neurotransmitter in the brain called glutamate. The brain has kind of on switches and off switches, excitatory proteins and inhibitory proteins. And they're all, every organ of our body is always trying to regulate go time or off time. It's called homeostasis, trying to reach a balance point. And so essentially Namenda or memantine acts on the excitatory neurotransmitter in the brain, and it tries to stabilize that. And the idea is that it helps reduce inflammation in the brain and helps stabilize neurotransmitter function. So those are the two major classes of approved Alzheimer's disease medication. Of course, there's ongoing research, multiple clinical trials going on to, you know, for preventative studies and additional treatments for Alzheimer's.
Thank you so much for sharing that in an understandable way and untangling those medications. If people want to know more about maybe aducanumab, you can check out a prior episode that we had with Dr. Attree about that subject. But right now, talk to us about, there are so many medications that somebody might already be taking when they start taking these dementia medications. And how often should somebody reassess their current medications? And who should do this?
Yeah, so, you know, every visit is an opportunity to look at and assess medication lists. There seems to be, you know, older adults, there's always a higher risk of medical conditions or diseases occurring. The older we get, the higher the risk of something's happening to us. And so a lot of older adults will have maybe multiple chronic diseases, heart disease, maybe they have kidney disease, maybe they have diabetes. And so they could quite, you know, they could have long medication lists. And so it's always reasonable, you know, every visit is an opportunity, I think, to, you know, reassess the medication list. And, you know, first thing I do is I look at what are the medications first off and what are their side effects. We can sometimes get into what's called a cascade medication prescription or prescribing cascade. And essentially one medication is started and then it has certain side effects. And then another medication is started to prevent those side effects. And then it's almost like a domino effect or cascade. And so that can occur, particularly with more and more, you know, if someone has multiple chronic diseases, then you have a multi-complex patient and managing medications and trying to deprescribe or reduce medications can be a little bit more tricky. The major medications right now for Alzheimer's disease and dementia, they're generally well tolerated. The first three medications I mentioned in that first category that act on acetylcholine in the brain, because they work similarly, they're going to have some very similar side effects. So people always want to know, you know, what can I expect? What's going to happen when I start taking this medication? I generally say, you know, for most medications, not just dementia medications, you're going to generally have a side effects maybe the first couple of days, you know, maybe, you know, 3 to 7 days, just as the body is getting used to it, particularly older adults, they may have more side effects, begin their threshold are lower. Like I mentioned before, the way that the physiological aging with the kidney and liver and drug metabolism, even lower doses, they could have higher adverse effect. But generally, you know, upset stomach, loose stools, some patients may experience more vivid dreams. And so that's what I really counsel them on for medications like donepezil, rivastigmine, galantamine. And generally those side effects go away, like I said, first, you know, 5 to 7 days in general, you know, ballpark. And they're well tolerated, but if someone is really having a lot of loose stools or diarrhea, you stop the medication and it's usually out of the system in about 24 hours or 1 day's time. The other class or second major class, Namenda or memantine, is very low side effect profile. Sometimes you can have dizziness or confusion, maybe get a little bit anxious. But really the biggest thing with Namenda or memantine is that it is mostly metabolized by the kidney. So it's very important that the physician who is prescribing this medication knows the patient's baseline kidney function, that they have good enough kidney function to even take the medication, because it's pretty much solely metabolized and excreted by the kidney.
Dr. Robinson, I'm learning a lot from this conversation. Thank you for clarifying the different side effects that families can watch out for in these dementia medications. And I can see the medication cascade being such a hazard, not only with people with dementia, but generally with older adults. Mm-hmm. And I think another way that medications could be introduced for someone with dementia would be to manage behavioral symptoms. Can you speak to managing those sorts of symptoms with medications? Is that appropriate? What's available?
There are some medications that are appropriate for treating behavioral symptoms, but the most important thing is to try to understand what is causing the symptoms. You know, the caregiver, care partner is likely knows the patient very well, and they understand or have an idea what their chronic conditions are. Maybe they have chronic pain, maybe something as simple as a headache. So it's really important to identify what is the symptom, you know, and trying to, you know, solve that problem or identify what the symptom is or what the cause is that is triggering agitation or aggression or a mood swing or, you know, trouble sleeping, things like that. As a geriatrician, I try my best to do a comprehensive exam. I ask questions, you know, we call review of systems. So even things like, have you had recent fevers? You know, are your bladder regular, bowel regular? Are you having pain? You know, something as simple as, did you have a bug bite recently and your skin is really itching? For someone with dementia, they know that their skin is itchy, but they might not connect that maybe they had a mosquito bite that is really bothering them. I just kind of scan the body head to toe, you know, have they been appropriately groomed? Are their clothes fitting appropriately? You know, have they lost weight? Have they gained weight? You know, things like that, just in their appearance and a quick body scan can be really helpful. I particularly want to make sure all of the assistive devices are correct. So if they wear glasses, is it a correct prescription? You know, do they need an eye doctor's visit? Hearing, is how is their hearing? Or do they have tinnitus or ringing in the ears? Are they wearing hearing aids? Are the hearing aids fitted appropriately? I mentioned clothing, tight clothing. Maybe they've been gaining weight and their clothes are too tight. That can be uncomfortable, particularly if they have a belt that sits around the waist. That could be causing abdominal pain, nausea. It could, you know, be related to constipation, bowel problems, bladder problems. And then foot care, I make sure that I look or ask about their feet. Do they have toenail problems? It might seem tedious, but really kind of figuring out what is bothering the patient that could be triggering those sort of, you know, behaviors. Additionally, there are medications we have that treat certain behaviors, you know, depression, anxiety. We even have medications like antipsychotics, medications for sleep. They all have their pros and cons to them. I think but the first thing to do is try to assess, you know, the environment and the patient and address what is the symptom that's bothering them the most. Are they thirsty? Are they hungry? Are they in pain? Things like that.
This is so good to know. And I'm wondering if there are any medications that someone with dementia should not be taking?
Yeah. So we have a many tools, you know, within the American Geriatric Society, that I refer to all the time. One of them is called the Beers criteria. So it was initially created by Dr. Mark Beers in 1991. It's been revised several times. The most recent edition was 2019. And essentially it's considered a medication guide for physicians, and it goes through many classes and categories of medications and what their potential side effect is or their risk of prescribing is in an older adult. When I ask about over-the-counter medications, I'm always asking about NSAIDs or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. This is, you know, your ibuprofen, Aleve, Naproxen, Motrin. That class of medication is related to hypertension. Chronic use can be related to chronic kidney disease. It can also, so it really has a effect on the heart. Long-term use of NSAID medications can also be related to swelling of the legs. And so it actually, you know, long-term can affect the heart and kidneys. And in someone with dementia, it might trigger delirium or acute confusion, can cause, you know, confusion, dizziness, drowsiness. So I always ask about NSAIDs. And then I ask about certain allergy medications and like PM sleep aids. So this is Benadryl, and then common, that's the most common allergy medication that I make sure that they're not taking, and PM drugs. So Tylenol PM, Advil PM, Unisom, and then the very common motion sickness medication, Dramamine. The reason why these are, you know, considered no-no drugs is because they act exact oppositely of their anticholinergic. So when I was talking about medications for dementia, I mentioned the acetylcholine. So acetylcholine is good for memory, good for cognition. We want to promote that. But then we have a class of medications that are anticholinergic. So they directly counteract acetylcholine. And so that's why you can understand that this medication, these types of medications could cause acute confusion or trigger a delirium. Other things that I look for, you know, are they taking any supplements? There are many over-the-counter supplements, too many to name at this point. You know, it seems like the list is growing, but a lot of herbal supplements or alternative supplements I always ask about, and just as a curiosity, but other common medications from the cardiologist, we have a class of medications, psychotropics. So I would say the most common things I look for are the NSAIDs and those allergy medications or PM medications. Those are the kind of the biggest offenders. Everything else is probably going to be prescribed from another specialist or the primary care.
Dr. Robinson, you mentioned that's the Beers criteria. Is that specific for people with dementia, or is that criteria generally for older adults?
Yes, it's general criteria for prescribing for older adults, so 65 and older. And it's important to mention too, you know, no two 65-year-olds look the same, no two 90-year-olds look the same. And that's a whole branch of medicine, gerontology, the science of aging. So, you know, it's always kind of proceed with caution. And when starting with medication, if a medication must be prescribed, you know, we're targeting certain treatment, you know, start low and slow. What that means is lowest dose, starting dose possible, and then may increase over time slowly. But yeah, it's a general older adult criteria.
So Dr. Robinson, before we close our conversation today, I have one really important question that I do want to ask you, and it has to do with supplements. Can you tell me, are there supplements that we could take that could prevent dementia or even reverse it in people who are showing signs?
There's nothing that's really been proven right now, you know, evidence-based and in the literature. I think the general consensus is, you know, doing things like lifestyle behaviors that are good for the brain. So, you know, moderate exercise, but, you know, then I changed that term to movement. Any movement is good for the body. Social engagement, which has been unfortunate with the pandemic, good nutrition. The diet I recommend is the Mediterranean diet. It seems to be favored by most providers. So good nutrition, get movement daily, try to interact with others, social engagement, moderate your weight, you know, weight management, and then other things, alcohol, tobacco. If you're diabetic, making sure that your blood sugar is well controlled. If you have hypertension, making sure your blood pressure is well controlled. Those are the major key things. There are a lot of supplements that target cognition or memory enhancement. I don't think that any of them work. One of the favored ones or popular ones is Prevagen. Unfortunately, when Prevagen is taken, it's deactivated by the stomach acid. So it never even has a chance to go to the brain and work. I think people would hope that there's a pill to take for everything. And, you know, someday soon, you know, we're going to have better treatments and medications for dementia and Alzheimer's disease, but there's no supplement that's been proven thus far. There's no you know, herbal remedy that's been proven thus far. I think acting on those good lifestyle behaviors and, you know, lifestyle changes is probably the best thing to do. I have seen two new studies that have come up. There was a trial or a study that was presented at the most recent, Alzheimer's conference, and it's called the Cosmos Mind Study. And it looked at cocoa extract as well as multivitamins use versus placebo for cognitive effect in older adults. And, this is very early, research, but it shows that there may be some cognitive improvement or positive association with older adults who take multivitamins versus the cocoa. So that would be, like chocolate, the main ingredient of chocolate. Another recent study that came out that was published in the Journal of Nature Aging, December 6th, was Viagra, actually. And they found that people who took the drug Viagra or sildenafil were less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. They cultured human neurons and they showed that it reduced the Alzheimer's biomarkers. But of course, more studies have to be done and see if this can be repeated. But I think that's an interesting path that we'll see what happens with that.
For sure. We'll have to bring you back as those studies unfold.
Right. Oh, sleep is the other one. So good nutrition, anti-inflammatory diet, Mediterranean diet, exercise, movement, and mindfulness too. Mindfulness, sleep, nutrition, social engagement, moving the body, less alcohol, less tobacco, manage your blood sugar, manage your hypertension.
What a perfect recap. I wonder, before we close, could you give us your final thought when it comes to medications and dementia?
Medications and the patients are not all one size fit all. I think as providers, we must try our best to kind of evaluate what we call the 5 M's. It's this kind of new branch of, thinking of age-friendly healthcare, but it's what matters most: mobility, the mind, multi-complexities, and medications. So using these 5 M's as somewhat of a guide, establishing early on what are the goals of the visit with the patient and their family or, support team. And that can really set an agenda. Is it pain relief? Is it living a long time? Is it, treatment for dementia? Of course, treatment is going to be a part of that, but kind of really looking at the big picture and trying to figure out what matters most to the patient, setting those care plans and care goals early. And that would really help facilitate other treatment and management goals. And it gives guidance to the provider as well to what's important to the patient. And I think, I really can't stress that enough, really understanding what matters the most to the patient and their family in terms of their care. And that is going to be different for everybody. And so, really valuing their personhood as well, and just understanding, trying to see from their perspective and their family's perspective what they're going through can also be a good guidance. So, doing your best to kind of see the big picture and then tailor your care towards, what best fits the needs of the patient and their family.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Jacqueline Robinson, a geriatrician with Banner Alzheimer's Institute. We appreciate you helping us untangle evaluating medications and dementia.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Robinson. It has been great to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd be happy to come back and discuss more.
We could discuss this for probably another week, but we just appreciate you simplifying it for us. And hey, thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Dementia Untangled and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiaUntangled@bannerhealth.com.